From KCRW, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. It's a program of true stories, documentaries, radio movies. And this season on Unfictional, the stories have to do with perception and seeing reality in a new way. And one thing stories are great at is finding clarity and meaning in a complicated world. For example, if I were a parent of a misbehaving 8-year-old in Barcelona, Spain, and I wanted to scare him straight, I could say something like this. If you don't buckle up, then a vampire lady is going to kidnap you in the night and turn your bones into unguents, which she will then sell at the opera house. And this Barcelona child will know exactly who I am talking about, because that vampire lady was a real person. The lurid and grisly legend of Enriqueta Martí has been turned into movies, books, and an opera. She's been a larger-than-life figure of fear since the early 1900s. That's when she lived in the crime and disease-stricken slum of Barcelona, known as El Raval. But when the life of a human being is turned into a legend, as that legend grows, the real person will eventually disappear. It's a story made by the production trio of Andres Bartos, Neil Innes, and Leanne Heyman. From KCRW, it's Unfictional and The Vampire of Barcelona.
Let me see. How do I tell you? It's hard to answer that.
This is Mark Pastor.
Truth has a lot of sides, a lot of faces. Never boring.
He's a crime scene investigator from Barcelona, Spain.
So, where was I?
He's a born storyteller.
When you're a child, you're scared by fairy tales, witches, haunted houses, dark forest. Enriqueta is that fairy tale.
Enriqueta is that fairy tale.
Enriqueta still scares us as the fairy tales did when we were a child. Because she's the witch. She's the witch from the tales. But a witch come true.
A witch, but a witch come true. This is the story of Enriqueta Martí, the vampire of Barcelona. Barcelona, 1912.
It was a dangerous city. It was a city that was growing up from being a country town full of fields and full of farmers to an European city, a bright European city.
Enriqueta Martí arrived in a city where trams, cars and horse carriages all shared the streets. Factory smoke and the noise of construction filled the air.
Enriqueta was a poor woman from a country house in San Feliu. She wanted to earn her living and went to the city. She went to Barcelona. She began being a prostitute. Then she became a madame.
Mark was fascinated by the Barcelona of the era. The rich going to dazzling opera houses while the poor were packed together in disease-ridden streets.
It was a neighborhood, you know, with dark alleys close to the harbor. It was a puzzle. It was a maze.
A puzzle. A maze.
And Enriqueta took benefit of that. It was her maze. And it was noisy, it was dark, wet. I wouldn't like to smell anything there.
Drugs came in from the harbour, prostitution was everywhere, and children went missing.
A girl disappeared on February 1912. A girl who was the daughter of a very loved family. Teresita Guitart.
Teresita Guitart was 5. She wandered away from her parents to look at a shop window and vanished. Her family, utterly distraught, went straight to the police. They handed out pictures and hung up signs, hoping someone would come forward with information. A week later, in the same neighbourhood where Enriqueta lived, a woman looked out of her window and saw a figure standing in the window of Enriqueta's apartment, a girl with a shaved head.
That woman said, "I think that girl is Teresita." So that woman went to the mattress maker and said, "I think Enriqueta has Teresita in her apartment." And the mattress maker went to a police officer. And the police officer went to another police officer. And that one said, okay, we're gonna go to her apartment and we'll make an inspection. The story says that the police officer came into Enriqueta's apartment, when cried to Teresita and said, who are you?
Tu qui ets? Jo sóc la Teresita, però que em diuen Felicitat.
I'm Teresita, but my name here is Felicidad. They call me Happiness. They also found another girl whose name was Angelina.
Angelina was a girl around the same age as Teresita, but nobody knew where she had come from. When people realized that not one, but two children had been found in the apartment, the case exploded. Hordes of people gathered outside Enriqueta's apartment. The police had to wave swords to control the crowd. And when the carriage taking Enriqueta pulled away, a mob chased it, screaming at her, the monster. Journalists flooded Barcelona, looking for an exclusive on the case.
They came from Madrid, they came from everywhere, just to know the case of the La Maladona, you know, the evil woman.
The child kidnapper, macabre findings. Enriqueta is a mysterious woman. Those bones speak of barbaric crimes.
And it turned out that the police didn't just find two girls.
They found bloody rags behind the walls.
Bloody rags.
They found bones and shoes from little children. The news spread so fast after that, said that she killed them.
And then the stories that began to appear in the newspapers became even more bizarre.
She used their blood, the grease of their bodies, the hair, everything, for making pomades and ointments and making medicines for rich people.
The police also found a list.
The names of important people from Barcelona.
A list of the city's elites with their addresses and payments.
The famous list of Enriqueta.
The press jumped on this, insinuating they were Enriqueta's clientele, regular customers for her sinister ointments. Journalists scrambled to find more details about the case. One broke into Enriqueta's apartment and reported on an elegant room he found, like a waiting room, furnished with a plush red sofa. According to the newspapers, she must have been running some kind of child prostitution ring. Perhaps the people on that list were coming to her for more than just ointments. Witnesses were reported to have seen Enriqueta in glamorous dresses at night, going to the opera house to sell her grisly beauty products.
All the journalists bought this story of that woman who was a beggar by day and a lady by night. That monster who was terrifying the mothers and the families of Barcelona.
You're listening to Unfictional from KCRW and The Vampire of Barcelona. Back in a moment with part two. From KCRW, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional and the story of Enriqueta Martí, The Vampire of Barcelona.
The case was filled with mystery, gore, strange characters. For Mark, too, Enriqueta was mesmerizing. Mark's been a CSI for over a decade.
Well, I'm a forensic detective. I go to crime scenes. We solve almost all the homicides. 98%.
In his spare time, Mark writes. As a young agent, he wrote a book about Enriqueta called Barcelona Shadows.
Everybody I know who has heard about the case is so fascinated about her, about what she did or what she maybe did.
Secuestradora, prostituta, traficante de niños.
O sea, si estáis hablando de Enriqueta.
Enriqueta's story lived on for a century, a boogeyman kids were warned about. Behave or answer to the vampire woman and have your bones turned into a rich lady's unguents. Then, 100 years later, after a story was published on the anniversary of the crime, Enriqueta was suddenly everywhere again. In short films,
La Vampira del Raval,
comic books,
Está la Enriqueta Martí,
and even a musical, The Vampire of Raval. But like a lot of stories that are passed down for 100 years, legend is legend. The truth is something else.
Durante los primeros días el caso parecía muy claro, era un secuestro.
Journalist and author Jordi Corominas is captivated by how the press covered Enriqueta's story, and he's read most of the newspaper accounts written at the time.
The first few days the case seemed really clear. It was a kidnapping and there was no problem. But then 10 days later, someone went into Enriqueta's house. They didn't force the door, they went in with a key. They looked around for something. The police found out, journalists did too, and the second part of the story began.
La Premsa de Arcadia is a newspaper archive and a cave of wonders for someone like Jordi.
Wow.
Floor-to-ceiling stacks of crumbling paper, lovingly cared for by the same family for years.
A ver.
Levantó pasiones.
People went mad for this story.
Los seres humanos somos un poco como niños pequeños.
Human beings are like little children. We need fantasy, legends, fables. We fall asleep, we enjoy ourselves, and relax.
Cambio, la verdad es turbia.
But the truth is murky.
Tu misión como periodista es informar. Ellos les daba
igual. I mean, your mission as a journalist is to inform, but these guys didn't care. All they wanted to do was sell newspapers.
The rumors fed the newspaper articles, the newspapers fed the rumors. It was a big, endless cycle. And all along, the police struggled to keep up.
Podemos imaginar aquí, pues, el paper boy, ¿no?
You know, you can picture the paper boy. Extra, extra, sensational crimes exposed.
Take, for example, an article written on March 23rd, 1912. It's actually called A Fantastic Report. The police decided to search the house of Enriqueta's lover, just outside of Barcelona, and a group of journalists joined them.
A trip to Horta, late at night. Lanterns, a guide, the tremendous and obsessive hope to find corpses in the mystery of that house impelled me to join them. We walk silently uphill. In the shadows, an odd lamp bounces about, seemingly of its own accord. The lamp hangs off the belt of a watchman. Is it here? As the door opens and the hinges screech, we shudder. And enter. Our faces are twisted.
Our hearts race. The lamp lights up nooks and corners. We move through four, five, six rooms. Suddenly a shock. Sanchez has discovered a key.
This is such a joke.
Most of the articles about Enriqueta read just like this one. Mysterious and dark, full of conflicting facts and colourful characters, this was a great story. But there was very little of what you'd expect from an investigation. No photos, no fingerprints. The police drew the crime scenes by hand with a pencil. They decided Enriqueta was guilty, and they made it their job to put her away. Here's Mark.
She went to jail. Newspaper were talking about her. It was like a show. And then the Titanic sank. And she was forgotten.
While the vampire of Barcelona lived on, the real-life Enriqueta was lost to history. Her case file, which wasn't properly preserved, disappeared or was destroyed, and the only thing that remained were the newspaper articles. Here's Jordi Corominas.
Los periodistas hicieron muy mal su trabajo.
Journalists did a lousy job and only told the story of the first months of the case. So it's the version that made her a psycho killer that's persisted.
It persisted through all the articles, the comics, the novels. One man even wrote his imagined diaries of Enriqueta Martí, an entirely invented first-person account that paints a picture of a manipulative seductress.
Realmente es una historia misógina. Y las historias...
It's a misogynistic story. And misogynistic stories are appealing to some people. Pretty much everybody who revisits the story of Enriqueta Martí are men.
Elsa Plaza is an archivist and activist.
Si hay una foto por ahí en el libro...
There's a picture in my book of a group of journalists from that time, and they're holding up her underwear and laughing. For me, that really sets the tone of the whole Enriqueta Martí affair.
Enriqueta Martí, no?
So, apart from the legend, who was Enriqueta Martí?
Enriqueta, hay muchas Enriquetas.
There were a lot of women like Enriqueta. She was part of a marginalized social class and had to survive by hustling, whatever she could get. When I did research about the case, she had defenders. Not everyone accused her of being an evil witch.
Ser una bruja malvada.
One woman tried defending Enriqueta. She cried out to people passing by on the street. But no one would believe she was innocent. She had kidnapped one child, Teresita, and meanwhile, no one knew where the other girl, Angelina, had come from. Mobs jeered at Enriqueta. She became the scapegoat for all the city's disappearing children. Desperate parents whose daughters had disappeared came to find out if Angelina was their child.
Precisamente la niña que vive con ella.
The little girl who lived there, Angelita, she was there because of the absolute misery that women lived in at the time. The girl was the daughter of Enriqueta's sister-in-law, and she had a lot of problems and left the child with Enriqueta.
Angelina was born out of wedlock. That was the type of scandal that could ruin a woman at the time in Barcelona. So she left her daughter with Enriqueta.
Enriqueta justo surge en un momento.
This was a time when women were considered diabolical by nature, and Enriqueta seemed to confirm the theory.
Es naturaleza diabólica.
A woman's role was starting to evolve in Spain at the time. Women had just started going to university, for example. But they were heckled at the door by other male students, who would even throw stones at them as they entered.
La mujer cuando se sale,
when a woman steps outside the role that nature supposedly has given her, when she isn't locked in and serving men's desires and needs, if she's out on the street, then she's diabolical.
Si rompe las reglas,
if she breaks the rules, she becomes the human beast.
En Enriqueta Martí.
She becomes Enriqueta Martí.
She became a symbol for the misery of Raval. All the frustration and anger of a city and an era fell on her.
Es un personaje catártico.
She's cathartic for everyone. She's tailor-made to cover up the shame of an entire generation.
During her research, Elsa discovered that many of the children who had disappeared from Raval were sold into prostitution or were trafficked for child labor. Some of them were forced to work in a French factory, producing decorative glass for the extravagant new buildings of the rich. Meanwhile, in Raval, thousands of people were struggling every day just to survive. Here's Jordi Corominas again.
There were women that had to work as prostitutes so they could feed their kids. Otherwise, they couldn't make ends meet. It's the Barcelona of 1912. In a population of around 570,000 people, 12,000 women were prostitutes.
Enriqueta es cualquier cosa menos política.
Enriqueta wasn't political. She was a survivor. She took advantage of the little assistance that the government offered and begged for food stamps.
Porque daba tarjetas de pobre.
That mysterious list of important people that they found in Enriqueta's apartment, well, it was really just a catalog of government representatives. She used the list to find these people and beg them for food stamps.
Perhaps the most defining moment in Enriqueta's life was the death of a child, her own child, Alejandro, who was born at home but died just months later of malnutrition. Witnesses at the time said Enriqueta was never the same after that. She was seen walking around the neighborhood with pillows stuffed under her clothes.
Sí puedo saber la angustia que puede ser haber perdido un hijo, el sentimiento.
I can understand the anguish of having lost a child, the fact of being poor, of going to find scraps of food at the prison, which was disgusting. Clearly, this is not the Enriqueta that everyone described, who would get dressed up at night and go to the casino. Well then, why was she begging for food? Why was she collecting stale bread or bones to sell to the rag and bone man? And we know that she didn't kill anyone, because there are no corpses. All of the bones they found were from bodies buried a long time ago that she collected from the cemetery.
Forensic tests showed that the bones were not new, but ancient, from animals or adults, not children. It was a common superstition that Enriqueta believed that bones in the walls would provide protection for the home. The fact is, there is no evidence that Enriqueta murdered anyone.
It's fine that people believe the myth, but it's like me talking about someone's grandmother saying she was a prostitute when she wasn't. We're talking about someone who's part of our collective memory. And when you pervert collective memory, you pervert society itself.
We can only guess as to why Enriqueta took Teresita. She never had her day in court. She died 1 year later, before any trial took place.
She died because she had uterine cancer. She said it from the moment they arrested her. She told them she was very sick. Obviously, no one believed her. No one believed anything she said.
There is another version that I like. I prefer it. It says that one night,
hitman came into the jail and stabbed her to death. And that hitman was paid by one of the customers who didn't want Enriqueta accusing him. So he paid for a murderer. Actually, it's not true. She died from cancer. But I prefer thinking about the hitman version.
It's a better story.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think it's harmful to perpetuate a myth for the sake of a good story?
Maybe it is. Sometimes I regret it myself. I think we are polyedric. We have a lot of faces. We're, you know, like diamonds shining in different directions. I think we need fiction. The fact that we have a drop of fantasy is what makes the story of Enriqueta more powerful. But maybe it's not only the myth. Maybe it's about the person too. And it's hard to accept as a writer because you have a responsibility there. And I only wanted to write about a scary story of monsters and serial killers.
If you ask Mark about Enriqueta, he's not sure if he should be the writer or the detective. If he's forensic, perhaps she wasn't the demonic killer he paints in his novel. If you ask Geordie, Enriqueta was merely a victim of sensationalist fake news. If you ask Elsa, the Enriqueta Marti affair, as she calls it, wasn't just the criminalization of one woman. For her, Enriqueta is an example of all the women whose stories have been taken away from them.
This story shows the way a destitute woman is stripped of her humanity and buried in accusations in order to distract from huge social injustices.
As Elsa says, if you only look at the crime, you get the story of a monster. If you look at the bigger picture, you get the story of a society.
The Vampire of Barcelona was written and produced by Andres Bartos, Neil Innes, and Leanne Heyman, with help from Aisha Brigan and Dave Bianchi at Drytown Studios in Barcelona. I'm Bob Carlson, the producer of Unfictional. The managing producer of the program is Carla Green. The editor is Nick White. Theme music by Alex Weston, with music help from Joe Augustine and Narrative Music. The Whistler is Jonathan May. On the next episode of Unfictional, in his mind, he was a poet, but to pay the rent, his job was telling irate customers they couldn't have their money back.
My saves reps would tell people, "You don't want to talk to my manager, really." They weren't kidding. I was not going to solve your problem. My job was to shred people.
I'm Bob Carlson. Please subscribe to this program wherever you listen to your podcasts and join me next time for Unfictional on KCRW.